welcome to this live episode of Cinephiles Live here on this Thanksgiving weekend on YouTube. I am the Outlaw John Roca, joined as always by my second half here on the Cinephiles, Steve Morris. How are you, Steve? Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. I hope you had a nice time. I had family over, and then I had other family over, and then I saw other people, and there was food, and it was like Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Yes. We went to one Thanksgiving. We drove up to LA. It was literally a 5-hour turnaround. We drove up there, got to our Thanksgiving get together at the Lady Outlaw's family's place at 1:30, and we were gone by 6, and then back home and home by 8. So it was a hell of a thing. And I had McDonald's because all they had was cold cuts and some mashed potatoes. And I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining. Food is food. I'm thankful. I'm grateful to be able
that's thematically. Yes, we are grateful. Yes.
But it was not my standard Thanksgiving. And so we took a whole day to detox the next day on Friday. And then yesterday, the Lady Outlaw made us a Thanksgiving dinner, just the two of us, which I will post some pictures of on Instagram, that I was very, very happy and honored that she would take the time to make a meal all day for us, just for us to eat literally for 30 minutes. And it was a blast, to be honest. So ended up being a good Thanksgiving. But today I am wrecked from all the requirements, the Christmas shopping, the Black Friday, and the Thanksgiving festivities. How are you feeling today?
I'm good. Can I ask you a question before because you made me curious, is like, so sure. in the classic Thanksgiving oeuvre, what is the go-to dish? Like, what is the thing that you really feel you have to have?
Oh, I have to have turkey off the bone. Like, there's no, you can, the sides can go in and out. You could do green beans. You could do Josh Moon's famous sweet potato casserole, which is arguably, there's arguments amongst our group about who created that first. You could have macaroni and cheese. You could have the Roca rice. You could have mashed potatoes. You could have stuffing. You could have the whatever you want to create, which we used to have really great stuff from our friends at Friendsgivings. You got to have turkey off the bone. I got to have a turkey leg that I can sink my teeth into nice and fresh. So that's the only thing I require on Thanksgiving, honestly. Everything else can be interchangeable, but I need that turkey off the bone. What about
you? And that is not a cold cut. That does not qualify.
No, it's honey baked. No offense to honey baked.
But it's stuffing. I love stuffing. I absolutely love stuffing. And it's this weird thing where it's like, I never have it other than Thanksgiving. I could make it. Yeah. And I did make some very, very good stuffing for this Thanksgiving. I had a new recipe, tried it out, came out perfectly. Right. And then I decided to do this. This is just the cooking corner to start the episode. But I just
grateful. Yeah,
I decided to do a ridiculous thing in cooking the turkey, which I decided to cook my turkey as turkey confit, which is to slowly cook it in oil, not frying it. And I had this whole plan. It spent a lot of time doing it.
Yeah.
Worked it out. And you know what it tasted like when it was done?
Turkey.
It was good. I mean, it was fine, but it was not. I really thought I had something magical that was going to happen, and it didn't.
I mean, that's part of the joy of cooking, isn't it? The trial and error and seeing what you can create and challenging yourself to try something new. Are you the kind of person that needs to cook your Thanksgiving turkey now? Like, or your Thanksgiving meal now? You need to be the chef, or are you okay ceding control of that to go to someplace else? If you go to someplace else, do you make your thing the next day or the day after?
No, I don't have any compulsion like that. I've been lately, because since COVID, and maybe this is the thing, I'll go with my first thing that I'm grateful for. I'm really wanting to work to be, I feel like I've turned the corner on being a hermit. Like, I feel like I'm going to start coming out of my shell again. Oh. And that one of the things that I've missed, which you made me think of, is I miss cooking for people.
Yeah.
You know, I love to cook. I love, so while I don't have any, you know, I'm happy to go to someone else's Thanksgiving and do nothing. That's great. Right. But I really did feel like cooking and doing some serious cooking for this Thanksgiving. And that's a thing that I want to put myself out there more. And I want to bring people into my home more and cook more for people in the coming year. That's part of my plan.
Well, there you go. I think that's awesome. I turned the corner to become even more of a hermit. So I will be balancing you out in the universe.
I'm glad that we're staying even.
Exactly. I have a very hard time leaving my house nowadays. It's not because I'm afraid to go out or I'm afraid to be around people. I'm not a, what do you call that? What is that called again? Where you're afraid to go out? I'm not a.
You don't have agoraphobia?
I don't have agoraphobia. No, it's more a matter of I don't want to do it. That's a different situation. I'm not afraid to do it. I just don't want to do it. I built it so I can stay here for the rest of my life. Now, I am getting pasty. There are issues going on with the whiteness of my legs. So I understand that there's some concern. I should probably start walking in the sun more. But overall, I kind of am enjoying staying a hermit, and even more so recently because they started a new app for the Critics Choice where we get the movies at home. So I'm watching a lot of these movies that I would normally have to go to screenings for. I'm actually getting to watch them here on my 65-inch television in my office and enjoy the films. So that makes me even more of a hermit. In fact, I may if I never went to a theater again, I might be okay, which is crazy.
I mean, I think COVID mixed with technology has enabled the hermit class in ways that we have never been enabled before. Like that is that you literally, I mean, you did have to go out to get some food at some point, and you really don't. There's almost nothing you have to go out for if you really don't want to.
If you can afford it, you're absolutely right, Steve. If you can, and that's so funny you say that because we have turned the corner now where, to use your statement here, where society has allowed us to be as adventurous as we want to be, but also as shut off as we want to be. Yep. If we can afford it and if we can make a living doing it, then you've got those options. So it's a matter of what works for you. Society has become much more open to allowing your state of existence to exist as you see fit, at least for now. We'll see what happens over the next few years. But for now, it seems like that's the way it's going, you know?
Yeah. And that's why I'm sort of at the point where it's like, I think I hit my limit. I think for me, like COVID and then with the split from Karen and stuff like that, I had such, and my son is a very needy, emotional person. He wants a lot of me. So in the week that, you know, when Karen moved out and then in the week that I didn't have Jackson, I was just like, well, I'm not going to talk to anybody. And that worked really well for a couple of years of I just was like alone and perfectly content. And somewhere about in the last 6 months, I was like, oh, I've reached the bottom of the hermitness and I need to start to emerge like a butterfly emerging from the chrysalis. I have to now join the world a little bit more. I'll still totally go. I'm still an introvert in a lot of ways and I'll still recover alone.
Right.
But
right.
A little bit more with the people. I'm going to try to be.
with the peoples we'll see if I will fight. That's right, with the peoples. We'll see if I follow in your footsteps, man. I probably should, but you know, I'm probably still in a little bit of my place, but we'll see. I mean, because there's a comfort level with a partner who works from home as well, and we're very happy with our own company and watching what we want to watch. And but they're, you know, and I do miss all you all up there in LA. I was thinking about that the other day and just wondering about how I should maybe remedy that and come up there a bit more, maybe once a month for a hangout or something. So it's because it's not that much of a trek if it's once a month. It is if it's like every week, you know. So
we'll see. There will be, I mean, shouldn't be announcing this publicly, but there are plans, tentative plans for a dude night in January.
That's what I hear. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Let's see what happens. Let's see if we survive it.
Yeah.
Can we still keep calling it dude night at our age? I don't know.
Are you still a dude?
It's an old man night. Isn't it old man night? I feel like it's an old man night more than
it depends on how you approach it, I suppose.
That's what you're right. Anyway, today we are going to be getting into things we are grateful for in 2024, because of course a lot has gone on in this year, and certainly for some people the way the year is ending maybe wasn't the best ending for the year. For other people, they're quite happy with the way the year is ending. So but we just wanted to kind of straddle the middle here and straddle the line a little bit and talk about the things that we are personally grateful for in 2024 as we're a little bit over a month away from saying goodbye. Oh no, actually less than a month away from saying goodbye now that we're in December to 2024. So we just kind of want to wrap up our Thanksgiving Day weekend by talking about this. And of course, for those of you who are not Americans, this is just another Sunday for you all, but for us here, it's very much our tradition from our birth or from our creation here of a Thanksgiving. So Steve, I guess we'll just go back and forth. I think would be great. If it's something that we're both thankful for, then we'll both chime in on it, but then we'll just take turns going back and forth. If not, what do you say? Does that work for you?
Sure. Can I say one thing before we get started on that, which is just to echo what you said. It's been a rough fucking year. And I don't just mean, yes, there was an election and everyone has whatever their feelings are about that, but it's like war in the Middle East, war in Ukraine. There's more feeling like things are going really bad. There's a lot of people dealing with the economy and jobs. Yeah. And, you know, we just had two strikes, which we had multiple strikes in the entertainment industry, and the entertainment industry has not recovered. You know, there are a lot of people still out of work. There's a lot. And so they're just feeling like a lot of doom and gloom. And when we were talking about this live show, I was like, let's try to find some of the positive. I just want to talk, you know, about this is an amazing world we live in. And yeah. I will say my first one, and it's really the most important for those people who've listened to the show. You might have heard that my mom had breast cancer.
Yes.
Was diagnosed in the spring, and she went through chemo and she had surgery, and she's just finishing up radiation, and she has handled it all like a rock star. And she has been pronounced cancer free. And it's such a testament to, like, all the things people say about positive mental attitude, mm-hmm. a healthy lifestyle. You know, that they were saying that my mom had the blood of a 40-year-old, you know, that wow. she's just, and she would go in. I literally went in with her to a chemo appointment, and the first thing she says to the nurse who's about to drip some, you know, horrible poison into her body is, I'm so grateful for your help and thank you so much. And you're such a wonderful person, because that's my mom's attitude yeah. about everything. Yeah. And so the number one thing is, I'm grateful for my mom and I'm grateful for her health.
I have to say, I'm grateful for your mom and her health as well. You know, one of the best people I've ever met in my entire life, certainly living in California, meeting her for the first time, meeting her multiple times and hanging out with her. And that one time she stopped in and hung out with us, or a couple times I think she stopped in and hung out with us on the board meetings. Those have been so much fun. And so, and talking with her personally, sitting down, I mean, it's a great energy in the world that your mom is. So I had worries, of course, I had concerns, but I had no doubt that she would fight this thing to the end. And so the fact that she has come out of it as stronger than ever and had the blood of a 40-year-old, no surprise at all. She just yeah. has that kind of, they're just so, you know what they say in apocalypse now? They're just those kinds of people that, you know, they're just going to get out of this war without even a scratch.
Exactly. Yeah.
And your mom is absolutely one of those yeah. people. So yeah, it's great to hear that your mom is fought through all this stuff and is out the other side of it for sure. Okay. Yeah. At the risk of just jumping the gun for both of us here, I will have to say, I have to say the first thing I'm grateful for are the fans of our show and the continuing growth of the show. And the amount of people that are on board with the show and listening to it every week and leaving us comments and coming after us, the good and the bad. You know, why haven't you done this movie? Why haven't you done that movie? Why aren't you talking about it? Why'd you forget this? It shows that a lot of people are listening to our content and enjoying our content and are, like, calling us to task because they want our content to be as good as possible. And so I enjoy that and love that. Our advisory board meetings have been a lot of fun to get to know some of the people who are at that level of the Cinephile Patreon. So that's been a real joy to hear their points of views, hear their different perspectives on things, and see so many people who are willing to let other people just talk and not necessarily want to own the conversation, not necessarily want to steer the conversation, just be open to be receptive to everybody's point of view. I mean, all of that has been an incredible joy, and all the great sponsors of the show over the last year that we've gotten who've really stepped up and pushed our show and supported our show. It's been an incredible surprise in 2024 to see so much of that as the show has expanded over these last 11 months going into our 12th month. So yeah, I just want to throw that out there.
I agree. And I want to echo everything you said, particularly obviously the fans. And it really is so cool that people understand what we're trying to do with the show and want to contribute and participate. That's really yeah. awesome. And again, like when we came up with the idea for the advisory board, we were going like, what can we give to them? You know, yes, the people right. that support the show. It's like, oh, we're going to bless them with our presence in a monthly conversation.
That's correct. We did not feel that way. But Steve is joking about it.
We didn't say it that way. But what I really didn't anticipate was how much they were going to give us.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like they have become real collaborators on the show. I look forward to the board meeting every month. Next one is coming up at 3:00 Pacific yes. time tomorrow, and that literally a large percentage of the movies that we are doing and the orders that we're doing them and some of yep. the questions we're asking all come from the advisory board, and that has just been a true joy. So I totally echo that.
Agreed. All right, what else have you got?
Well, we kind of left this sort of vague and open. And so, you know, and we said we can be about entertainment things and other things. Here's one for me. It's like, I'm really grateful that two of our greatest filmmakers are still working and still making films. And that is Steven Spielberg and Martin Scorsese. Even though I didn't love Scorsese's last movie, and I'm not going to love every Spielberg movie, these guys are still at the top of their games 50 years into their career. And I just hope that they keep working. That's it's amazing to me to have watched these guys make movies for as long as they have, and that they're still great, great filmmakers.
Well, you have to throw a third one in there, don't you? That is also contemporary, but rarely gets talked about as contemporary. Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott.
There you go. Yeah.
Right. It came out in the 1970s. That's what Ridley Scott made his bones there with Alien, and then into the 1980s and what he did. So I'm absolutely, I agree with you. We may not like their content. Oh, sorry. Their films constantly. I don't want to say content. People get real upset about the word content. Their films all the time. But the fact that they're still there making great films, certainly Spielberg a few years ago with West Side Story, and now Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon, whatever my feelings are about the film, it's expertly directed. It's beautifully directed. Same thing with Gladiator 2. Whatever my issues are about the story or the script of Gladiator 2, Ridley Scott's direction here is not in question for me at all, with the action sequences, with the intimate moments, with the casting of the actors. So I agree with you. It's great that these directors are still plying their trade all these years later, like 4 or 5 decades later, for our enjoyment, and occasionally getting it right and occasionally not getting it right, but still out there doing what they can do with their voices, you know?
Absolutely. So what's your next one?
Let me see what I've got here. Let's go to TV, because I want to do entertainment. I am really thankful for the TV shows we got this year that kind of kept me excited and looking forward to what the medium can do. You know, whatever's going on in our world can be tough for us to process, can be difficult for us to navigate, but that's why TV or entertainment becomes so important, because there's a place you can escape into. There's a world you can escape into. And sometimes the world rewards the bad people, but it's an enjoyable journey if it's a good show to get there. And sometimes, and most of the time rather, the shows reward the good people, and we want to believe that that is possible. And so some of the shows that I was really impressed by this year, I just want to list them off real quick. Obviously, The Penguin, which was incredible. Shogun, which Steve and I did some fantastic reviews. If you haven't listened to the reviews, they're up on our podcast feed and also on my channel, The Outlaw Nation. Steve was very kind to do that. I thought Fallout was an incredible show. Lioness is a new show that I've been jumping into, finishing off the first 2 seasons here as we go into the last few episodes. The new season of the most recent season of Hacks was incredible. English Teacher. If you guys haven't seen English Teacher, I thought that was an incredible commentary about what it's like to be a teacher nowadays, with some great comedic input that was completely different from Abbott Elementary. And I enjoyed it for what that was overall. Baby Reindeer, an incredibly challenging show to dive into. The new season of The Bear, the new season of Slow Horses, the last season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, the second season of Calling from Accounts, the second season of The Old Man, Bad Monkey, Batman Cape Crusader was a hell of a journey for sure. X-Men 97, True Detective, Night Country. Those are just some of the shows that I dove into this year that I was just so impressed by, not only the artistry, but the overall effect of the shows when I was done watching their season. So yeah, I'm so thankful to see so many exciting creators getting a chance to put these kinds of different shows on TV.
So many of those that are on my list too. One of them that, like, and I had watched the first season, and I hadn't watched seasons, the more recent seasons, and yeah. I resisted it for some reason. And then I finally jumped in and watched all of Hacks, and man, that's a good show.
Yeah.
And it does the thing that, like, classic Neil Simon would do, which is that you're laughing and crying at the same time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it is really super, super funny. And gets really emotional and really tugs the heartstrings in this wonderful way. Totally agree with you about Penguin. I don't, you know, everyone's been singing their praises and for good reason. I thought doing that Shogun spoiler reviews with you was so much fun. And it was such a weird thing to have, like, here is this book that is of my youth that I knew I had memorized. And then to return to it and see it done in a new and more authentic way that still honored the original material but also was its own thing, I think was brilliant. I think both Rings of Power and House of the Dragon are way better in season two.
Yeah,
like I liked them both. They had mixed things in the first season, and season two come along and I'm like, okay, no, this is really starting to work. I think The Boys killed it.
Oh yes, yes,
The Boys. I mean, talk about, like, daring. I mean, in the same way that The Penguin is extremely daring filmmaking for television, and so is The Boys. Totally different things, but The Boys is like, we don't give a shit. We are going at whatever we're going at, and we're going to be gross and offensive and nasty and weird and challenging and funny and exciting, and it was great. It's just a great, great movie. Obviously, as a foodie myself, The Bear is just I don't think season three was as good as season two, but it certainly had episodes that were really fantastic. And then, of course, you listed a whole bunch of other stuff I haven't seen because I don't watch as much stuff. Mm. And that is, I never, you know, there was times back in the day where I had a little remote control and I would switch through the channels and I'd go through the whole circle of channels, not find anything. And then I would go through the whole thing again. Yeah. Not find, and I'm like, oh, there's nothing to watch. What am I going to watch? I am grateful that today there is so much great stuff and I'm never going to get to it. I will, you know, it's like, I'm not going to switch through channels again because there's always, always more great television that I have not seen. You know, that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, for me, yeah, I agree with you with Shogun. That was such a great experience because of course I had only read the book like way back when I was a kid. And so I didn't remember hardly any of it. And the fact that you were so great at pointing out the differences between the book and what we were seeing on the screen and what James Clavell's intentions were. So it's going to be real curious for us to explore season two, if you're still down to go forward with that and see how that, how they're doing these stories when they don't use, they don't have the source material to base it on. I'll be real curious to see what that experience is going to be like. But I thought the performances here from everybody, from Cosmo Jarvis to Anna Sawai to all the Hiroyuki Nakata, all these great actors being a part of it just really pushed it across the line, and a bunch of actors I'd never even heard of who are probably very well respected in their native countries delivering incredible performances throughout that series and showed you what you can do when no one is looking and you create something great. You can still capture the pop culture zeitgeist and bend it to your will, because no one was talking about Shogun as a limited series. And I remember they believed that they had something really special when they invited a bunch of critics out to go see the first two episodes in a theater. And so to have that experience for myself, I was very grateful for that, to experience it that way in order to dive into it afterwards. But yeah, I mean, Baby Reindeer is one that I can't recommend enough if people
have been scared. I haven't done it yet. I know it's great. Everyone says it's great, and I know it's going to just mess me up, and I'll get to it. I promise.
100%. 100%. And there's a reverse version of this that's out now on BritBox. I think it's called something about So I May Kill You, or I, something like that, where it's a, you're seeing it through the perspective of the abusive man. So very interesting exploration to reverse it. And so, but Baby Reindeer itself, you're right, it is going to wring you out emotionally and it is going to mess you up, but it's an incredible series that explores what this situation is like and challenges you as a person. Like, what side are you on depending on what's happening, how much sympathy you have for one side or the other, or empathy? And I thought it was fascinating. So it's great to see shows like that that challenge us. We have to be, what I saw in 2024 is this desperate push for creators to be like, stop trying to force our stuff to fit into a box anymore. We want to make stuff that we want to talk the truth that people are talking about when they're amongst themselves. Not the safe stuff, not the stuff where you're supposed to act on your best behavior. No, the real stuff. We want to see more real stuff. And I think that's the things that people gravitated to. English Teacher, I was going through a bunch of lists today. It was almost on every list of the best shows of the year, and hardly anyone outside of critics' spheres are talking about that show. And that show was a very funny exploration of what it's like to teach high school nowadays and the things you have to navigate as a teacher. He's a gay Latino teacher, what his experiences are like navigating all the different requirements. And of course, we know it from our ages, what it's like to go through high school. But this is something completely, it's almost another existence entirely. And you're watching it happen. And it's so well done, while also retaining heart, while also saying, making a commentary that's really powerful and challenging us as a viewer to look at it from a certain perspective rather than our own.
That just sounds great. Well, and this is the thing I think there's been a lot of effort lately to say that this is what good is in the world and this is what bad is in the world. And there's there's an absolute definition and we can know what it is, and whichever way you are, like that, there's like, oh, you did that, so you're one of the bad people. Oh, you did that, so you're one of the good people. And it's like, people are gray and complicated and weird. And that's why, you know, like a show like The Boys is going, no. That's not what people are. And I know that I'm not saying that The Boys is realistic, but I am totally agreeing with you of like the gray areas and the humanity and the complexity and the not preaching from sort of this is what is good, but going like, this is who people are.
Yes.
Because we get up all the time and life is stressful and difficult and complicated and weird. And sometimes you don't do things the way that you're supposed to do them. You know what I mean? Like, but it's not, you can't just go through life going, I am doing all the right things. And therefore I'm, that's not how life works, you know, and that's not who people are. People are irritating and, you know, odd and peculiar. And there are some people are into this and some people are into that. And I hope that art and good art reflects, like we were just talking about the bear. Mm-hmm. The bear is a bunch of messed up people, you know?
Yeah.
And I love those people. Like, that's what, or you mentioned Curb Your Enthusiasm. Talk about messed up people. Like, you know, like that, but that's why we love the shows. We don't love just watching perfect people do perfect things the way they're supposed to all the time.
Yeah. I mean, that would make for a boring show.
Yeah.
Very boring show. You know, you like the challenges. Hey everyone, this is John Rocha here for the Cinephiles and for Uncommon Goods. Now, why am I talking about Uncommon Goods? Well, it's because Christmas is right around the corner and you see more and more people in the stores, and it's because people are getting out there earlier and earlier to try to find unique gifts for the important people in their lives. Well, I've got someplace you can absolutely go to find that, and that is uncommongoods.com. They are a secret source for incredible original gifts. They have unique hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. I found so many cool, interesting things there. They've got a floating moon desk lamp, which would be awesome to have on any nerd's desk. They've got customized sweaters that you can get that are based on pictures of your pets. You send in a picture of your pet, and they do a knit illustration of your pet on a sweater. For those of you who love your pets, I can't think of a better gift to give to yourself or to someone you know in your life. And they've even got these awesome radios that are in the shape and style of the 1940s, 1930s radios. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. And they've donated more than $3 million to date. That's incredible. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/cinephiles. That's uncommongoods.com/CINEFILES for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
All right. What have you got, Steve? I know you were agreeing with the TV one, but what else have you got here? There have been some nice, and I didn't get the longest list of them, but because I know I've seen so many more, but like, I've really been enjoying like biographical documentaries lately.
Ooh.
And one of them, there was the 2-part Steve Martin documentary.
Yes.
That was so, what was so great about it. And I had read, which I've read over and over again, his autobiography, Born Standing Up, which is just about his career in stand-up up until he stopped doing stand-up. Right. And so part one really reflected that book and had its own style and really talked about that young Steve Martin. And part two was filmed in an entirely different style, talking about the older Steve Martin. And I just find him to be a fascinating, lovely character. And there were some other ones too, like some sports ones. Like I watched the Joe Montana series, which was so as a San Francisco, even though I'm not a huge football guy now, coming up in the 80s in the Bay Area, man, the Niners were everything. And so that era, I was a big sports guy and I did follow it. And it was such a blast from the past. You would recommend that Pete Rose documentary, which was great.
Yeah.
And there was and I've seen a bunch of others and they're not all popping in my brain, but that's a real comfort for me, is going in, whether it's a sports biography documentary or an entertainment person, or like those have just been a go-to thing for me this year that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, and maybe not all of these maybe have come out in 2024, but they came out in streaming on 20. Like the Gene Wilder one, I thought was a very sweet documentary that came out.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. I really enjoyed that one. The 6-part series on Mr. McMahon, Vince McMahon on Netflix.
It's on my list.
Dude, that was a hell of a journey. And if you ever get to finish it, I'd love to do a short with you about it and your thoughts on it. As someone who's not, you know, as into pro wrestling as I am, I know you were at some point earlier on in your life. So it would be fun to explore what your thoughts are on it from a completely different perspective. But I was blown away by that documentary, both because it was shot before the allegations, and then there was an episode and a half after the allegations, and how that changed the entire course of that documentary was a fascinating thing to explore. You're right to mention the Pete Rose doc. That one was so much fun and sad in a lot of ways as well, to explore what the tragedy of this guy and how much he didn't want to see what he was doing. I thought the Celine Dion documentary that's on Prime Video was an eye opener for me as someone who loves Celine's music, but also occasionally made fun of her at her prime because of, you know, the accent and being with a guy who was what, 20 years her senior and all of that, you, and her little movements and all of that, you kind of just feel the need to make fun of that a little bit. But when you watch the documentary, you really awakened to the dedication, the craft, and the love she has for what she does, the humility. For all the diva stuff, there's a humility to her talent, a humility to her abilities, and her joy that she gets from entertaining people. You know, there's that combo of, I know what's right and I know what works for me. So I may come across as being like a hard ass, but the reason I know what's right is because I know what the people want, and I give that to them every night, and I care about the people. So I'm going to be a bit of a hard ass to make it happen. And so I love that as a challenging thing to watch for me personally throughout that. I thought the USA for Africa won, The Greatest Night in Pop.
Oh, so good. That was so good. Yeah.
Talk about that one, Steve. What did you think about that one? Did you enjoy seeing all the different artists and how that all came together?
It was so cool. What was so great about it was how it humanized all of them. You know what I mean? Yep. Because when, you know, I remember when that came out, it's like, here are the greatest pop stars and singers, and they're all doing their thing, and they're all perfect. And to realize, like, it's one night, and they're all up all night, but a lot of them super insecure and freaked out and not exactly sure what they're doing. And Bob Dylan doesn't know how he's going to handle this lyric and needs help from somebody else, and like trying to figure out how they all fit together. And like, it was A, super moving just to humanize all those people, and B, what I love watching art come together. I mean, we wouldn't be doing the Cinephiles if that wasn't deeply meaningful to me.
Yeah.
And so watch them slowly figure out how to do this thing and then deliver on this song, which I love that song. You know, like that's, I mean, yeah, is it cheesy? Is it of a certain era? And yeah, sure. But no, I love that documentary. I thought it was great.
I thought so too. For me, who's not a, you know, a musician by nature or understands how you produce, quote unquote, produce a track, it was eye-opening and illuminating. And to get it, to see it rather, from the point of view of so many people involved in it, and how many people were like yes and no up until the last moment, getting all those people into the room to be able to do it for one night, to be there for all those multiple hours, all these people at the height of their success or extended success. When you look at Bob Dylan with those numerous decades of success, it was fascinating to see that. And then the Cyndi Lauper story, which I thought was really hilarious. Yeah. Some of the Huey Lewis stuff, Steve Perry, Michael Jackson, clearly. But hearing all the audio engineers talk about the process, talk about them putting it, talk about Quincy. And of course, right before Quincy died, a few months before Quincy dies, having this documentary come out that really highlights the talent and the genius and the little bit of the producing impishness of Quincy Jones to get everybody together on the same page to be able to get this done, I thought was incredible. And so much so that I saw the new documentary that's out on YouTube right now for the creation of Do They Know It's Christmas Time? A documentary of that. It's 4x3, but it's in 4K. It's beautiful. And it's all about how they brought all these artists together to do Do They Know It's Christmas? It's only an hour and 15 minutes, and it's free to watch on YouTube. I watched it 2 days ago on the couch and was just blown away by having all these incredible artists coming together who had issues with each other, by the way, to do that song. And so, yeah, those documentaries are all fantastic. But I have to say the number one for me, Steve, since you brought up biographical documentaries, is the Super Slash Man one on Christopher Reeve.
Which I still haven't watched. Sitting there. It's literally on my Apple TV. It's the number one thing. And I go, okay, tomorrow I'm going to do it. Because I know I'm going to sob through the whole thing.
You are absolutely going to sob. Yes.
Yeah.
Four or five times. It's so beautiful. I'm not going to spoil it or ruin it in any way. Just, it's a beautiful exploration of Christopher Reeve's life. And look, by all accounts, we should hate this son of a bitch. He's so beautiful. He's so talented, he's so intelligent, so well-spoken, so calm in his demeanor, so full of confidence, yet full of humility and full of insecurities and fear. And all of that gets highlighted as all these people in his life talk about what it was like knowing him at different stages of his life, from famous people like Glenn Close to family members to fans to people who you don't know that well speaking about it, and then clipping in commentary from people like Robin Williams and his wife and the journey he went on after the accident. All of it is explored so powerfully, and there's such great stuff about Superman, the 1978 movie with him there in it, but then also all the stuff afterwards after the accident. It's so devastatingly moving, and I'm glad they put it out, and I think it should be nominated for an Oscar. We'll see. But that's my favorite one of the year so far. I couldn't believe it, Steve.
Wow. I will change gears for us.
Okay.
I believe that we live in the best of all possible food worlds. I said at the beginning of the show that obviously I'm a foodie, and I think, and I know that restaurants just took a beating during the pandemic, obviously, but this other thing happened, which was there are all these pop-ups that started in the pandemic where someone's doing a thing out of their garage or out of their backyard or making pizzas here or doing that, that have become brick and mortars in LA. And they're all these really, like, it's, there's so many people that was like, I was a Michelin star, worked at some super fancy kitchen and got burnt out. And then COVID happened. And it's like, oh, I just wanted to make this, you know, this Burmese dish from my family. And I made it in my garage and now they have a restaurant. And so there are all these places that I literally have my Yelp list and I hear about one and I'm like, okay, let's bookmark that in the to try list. And if I'm in a certain neighborhood, I go, what's in this? What's here? And then, you know, so there are all these places, like there's a place called Little Fish of Echo Park that makes like the gourmet Filet-O-Fish sandwich. Ooh. And that is the thing that they make, and there are lines for it and people love it. And there's, what? You know, like, oh, there are all sorts of things. Little, there's a place called Perilla, which is a little Korean banchan place that's in like a garden in the hills somewhere near my house. And it's just the woman, again, a Michelin star chef. And like, she's making these Korean dishes that she wants to make with whatever seasonal ingredients there are. And it's like so much stuff like that is happening in LA. And I am super grateful for all of it. And I'll say, when I moved to Los Angeles in 1994,
yeah,
LA was not a pizza city. It was hard to find good pizza. And now I am surrounded by great pizza. And there's Michelin star one called Quarter Sheets, which was a pop-up that became one right in Echo Park that makes amazing pizza. And of course, there's Pizzeria Bianco, which is a famous pizza guy from Phoenix, one of the best pizza makers in the world, opened a place in LA. They serve slices. It's ridiculously good. So I am very, very grateful for all the creative. And the nice thing about it is, this stuff isn't that expensive, you know, because they're like taking their all their skills, but they're in a little tiny little shop making one or two things, and that's all they make. And it's great. Great. So I'm very, very grateful for the world of food in Los Angeles today.
I don't know if I've got anything more to add to that.
It's not your thing. I mean, that's not, you know, you don't, you're that you're into, you know, you're into wrestling and sports and a million things that I'm not into, and I am into food. And that's, and one of, and I'm not, I'll leave it up to our audience to decide which one is a healthier passion. I'll just say that.
I will say this, connected to food, though, I will give thanks for something or be grateful for something that just recently wrapped up. And that's the most recent season of the Great British Bake Off. I love that show. I don't watch many food shows, but that show is in my sweet spot. There's something about the theme song. There's something about Paul and Prue. There's something about Allison, who's become the new host over the last couple of seasons, along with, is it Neil? I think Neil is his name. And the idea of these people coming into the tent with these aspirations and these goals and these dreams and this a combination of insecurity and fear and desire to be seen as valid as a chef or as a cook, to see or as a baker, to see what they can do in those tents. There's something really inspiring about that, and food is like that. Food is it's not like a movie or a TV show, right? Like, I can't sit there in 1 week and create a TV show and shoot it and edit it and get all the actors and write it and then put it out. With food, you can do that. You can see the creation of art.
Yep.
So right there throughout four hours segment or whatever, you see them trying to get it right. And so there's something really inspiring about that appeals, I hope appeals to anybody who has a creative bone in their body, because you're watching these people's creativity come through in what they can do on that show. I don't think the American version or the Australian version or these other versions quite capture the same magic as the Great British Bake Off. And I love that show just wrapped up its most recent season with a very worthy winner. And I thought it was so much fun to be reconnected to a place that symbolizes joy and acceptance and diversity and equality in their approach to the overall goal of the show, which is to find the best baker out of all of them, or best chef out of all of them. So that's the extent of my food knowledge with Steve Morris. It's watching a show like that.
Right? Well, and you reminded me another one, and this is both a chef and a book, which is that Tom Colicchio, who's the host of Top Chef, just came out with an autobiography called Why I Cook that is fantastic. It is half autobiography, and it has recipes in it. It's half cookbook. And I'm thinking that in 2025, I might do something I've never done, which is I might cook my way through the entire cookbook.
Wow.
Because he, Tom Colicchio is such, I realized as I was listening to him, he's so my style of food. Like, I really love the way he gets, it's very simple. It's very ingredient forward. It's, it doesn't want to be showy, but it's all about technique. And I'm like, okay, if I could cook my way through this whole thing, it'll up my cooking game. I'm like, this could be a fun thing to do. And it's a really, really enjoyable book. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Let's see what I got on my, I guess I'll do something personal, real quick, and then we can move past it. I'm thankful this year for getting into the Critics Choice Association. That was something that I know for me, I struggled with applying for it. I struggled wondering if I even was worthy to be part of it. I know a couple of people that I worked with in the past discouraged me from applying for it, claiming that I didn't have enough credits or knowledge to be able to apply for it. And so there was a lot of my own personal issues hung up with applying for it. And I ended up leaving initially the Hollywood Creative Alliance just to kind of clear the deck. And they made some changes. And then I applied for the Critics Choice Association and they accepted me. And, you know, it was my first time ever applying. And I work really hard at, you know, creating great shows on the channel and also our show and talking, reviewing films, talking about films in whatever way that I can. And so it really was a proud moment for me to be accepted by them and then go back into the HCA, which made some changes to how they operate. And so for me, ending the year being a part of two critics organizations, getting all these movies ahead of time so I can look at them and analyze them and give my two cents. I just put up my Nosferatu review, which is out there for people to read on Instagram and Twitter. For me, it's another step in the process of finally going, look, you belong here. You do belong here, no matter what anyone tells you. You fucking belong here. Have a bit more confidence, have a bit more belief and strength in what you can do and start staking an even stronger claim in this arena. So I've always been kind of shy. I've always kind of been damaged by some of the behavior or treatment that I received in certain places when I was initially starting out. It's made me hesitant to feel like I belong as a movie reviewer or a critic. And even sometimes a couple of my friends have said, well, I don't really see you as a critic. And it's been damaging for me. But hitting this, getting these certifications for me is further proof that I do belong here. So for me personally, I'm grateful that these doors opened for me, one reopened and another one opened for me to help me feel a bit more firmer in what I'm trying to do. And 2025 is a very strong year. I can feel where I will be doing much more criticism on my channels and on my social media feeds to really up my visibility and my game in all of this. And I might even be joining Letterboxd to start an account there to add my reviews for stuff that I won't necessarily review on social media or on my YouTube channel. So these are the doors that I'm opening for myself, step-by-step, piece-by-piece. So that's all for my personal thing.
First of all, that's awesome. And of course you deserve it. And of course you're a critic. And just going back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show of like people being weird and saying weird things. Like what the, why the fuck would someone say, I don't see you as a critic? Like what the Jesus Christ, like that just pisses me off. It's like you do it and people pay attention to you doing it. Like stuff like that is just ridiculous. So congratulations. It is well earned and you put a lot of work into it.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. And I appreciate every time you've helped me review stuff. So thank you, man. What do you got, Steve? What do you got?
So I will also do a personal one, which is that as most people who listen to the show know, that Karen and I decided to part ways a few years ago.
Yes.
And I am very, very grateful that it continues to be extremely amicable. I was at her house last night. She was at my house for Thanksgiving. We are traveling together again because it's easy with Jackson. And we are very, very good friends. And I am really grateful that we have continued to navigate. It's not always easy. It's sometimes it's complicated and sometimes it's emotional, but we are both really, really determined to continue to support each other, continue to be co-parents, continue to be partners in all of that. And I'm really grateful that so far, so good. We are still friends, you know?
Yeah, that's important. I think overall the commentary is about how do you reconstruct a relationship after it's fallen apart. And, you know, a lot of therapists, psychiatrists will tell you that it's actually healthy to maintain a friendship with a person that you've been with after an appropriate amount of time, or to transition into a place if you both feel comfortable reconstructing a new relationship together, because there are positive things that you that brought you together to begin with. And those positive things are still there. It doesn't mean that it just because it didn't work out, it doesn't mean that that can't still be celebrated and be a foundation of a great friendship. And so I do nothing but applaud you for that, because it's not easy for everyone, certainly for those kinds of situations, you know. I mean, Dateline is full of people where it didn't work out that way. For God's
sure.
Sake.
So, yeah, sure.
So, let's see what else we've got here. Yeah. You know what I'm thankful for? And this is kind of a goofy one. Doctor Who is back. Like I wasn't the biggest fan, not because I didn't like Jodie. I love Jodie. I think Jodie Whittaker is a great actress. Loved Broadchurch. Loved her in a numerous Venus, that great film she did with Peter O'Toole. But I felt that Doctor Who was kind of let down by that run there with Jodie. And it had nothing to do with Jodie. It was all about the previous showrunner. And to see the showrunner come back from the last iteration there and take control here and bring in so many interesting characters to be a part of, like Shuti Gatwe and a new companion here, and see where we go with this stories, and reviewing them with Michael Vogel was a lot of fun. But for me personally, as a Doctor Who fan who came on during the Peter Capaldi years, I, you know, it was sad to kind of walk away from it for a bit and to have it back in my life, to have the joy and the hopefulness and the cheesiness and the fun of Doctor Who back in my life. I was very grateful to have that again in 2024 and to feel that smile again that I haven't smiled quite the same way since that show, since I couldn't watch the show anymore. So I was very grateful to have that back in my life. What about you, Steve? Anything that came back into your life in 2024 that you weren't grateful for at all, or anything that like maybe had walked away for a bit and then you rediscovered at all in 2024?
That is a good question. Let me see if I have an answer. I'm looking at my list here and see what I've got. Yes, here's one. I know this kind of got mixed responses, but I totally liked it as a comforting thing from my past, which is I totally liked Mel Brooks's History of the World Part Two series.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, and oh, I know, you know, because what was so funny about it was like, yes, this is that sense of humor. It is exactly the same sense of humor from when he did History of the World Part One. And do I think it was great television? Would I recommend it to anyone who's not didn't grow up in that era? No, I probably wouldn't. But as a comforting piece of my past to go like, this is more Mel Brooks. And let's just say, I am grateful for Mel Brooks, who's, I think, very close to turning 100.
Yes.
He's still around. I heard him interviewed recently and he's still Mel Brooks. And I am grateful that I hope he stays around as long as possible.
How about the Marc Maron podcast? Can we be grateful for that? That is still going on, still kicking in. I rediscovered it again this year. I hadn't, after having not listened to it for a bit, it was nice to be back into the realm of Marc Maron and his, and I feel like this is crazy to say, he's even gotten better now at this older age of doing it. There's a much more comfort and ease with how he's asking these questions and flowing into the conversations that I thought was fun to see. And one of my favorite was from a few years ago when he interviewed Mel and Carl Reiner, which is what got me thinking about it just now. So I'm happy to have that back in my life as well.
It's funny you say that. I think he's been killing it. I think between like the Al Pacino, I don't remember what all the more, there's a Josh Brolin one that was amazing. Yeah. The Al Pacino. There's so many. I think his show has been, I don't think it ever lagged. And I've listened to it from the beginning and I've listened to essentially every episode.
Yeah.
So like there are times it's like, okay, whatever, you know, I was not that into it. The last few months, I think it has been so good. And it's funny because I've developed a bit of a friendship with Brendan because he came on our show.
Right.
And so I write to him about like, hey, that interview was good. And I have a little bit of back and forth. And I believe that Brendan will be coming back on the Cinephiles.
Yeah.
I don't know if we want to announce what the episode is going to be.
We should wait for it to announce.
Let's wait.
He is going to be coming. Yes.
But Brendan McDonald, if we can work everything out and scheduling, will be coming back to the Cinephiles for an episode, which I think will be very, very popular. Here is a weird one. Here's a piece of technology which we're all very worried about. And I want to tell you, and I continue to be worried about it, and we should be worried about it, and that is AI. But I would like to tell you how it has helped me personally on the Cinephiles.
Okay.
And that is, which I mentioned to you privately, John, but there's a piece of software called Mac Whisper. And here's the deal. In doing the Cinephiles, I have to type a lot in prep because I'm trying to type all the dialogue down. And that was the worst part of doing the podcast, was just having to type so much and trying to keep up. And I would keep rewinding, like, what did he say? And type it. And what did he say? And go back and forth. And then I found Mac Whisper, which is a AI-based transcription software. And I just put the movie in and it outputs all of the dialogue. Is it perfect? Not even close to perfect, but it saves me so much time. Every single week, having it do the lion's share of the transcription. And then I just go and read through it as I'm watching the movie and make corrections and edits and add descriptions and things like that to prep for the show. It has made my life so much easier. So I am very grateful for this little bit of AI.
Absolutely. And look, you passed that on to me when I was doing one of the most recent shows for us. And it was immeasurable to have that and use that as a guideline in writing the lines out or transcribing some of the copy that we would, that I was doing to lead that particular episode. So I totally hear you, man. It's great to see that that's something that's available. And look, I mean, I mean, we're going to have to come to terms with it. It's, there's no way out of this thing. It's getting stronger and we're seeing more and more of that being used. I just don't know what the end result is going to be once we start replacing all these people with this AI. What are we going to do with all these people in our world and in our countries? What are we going to do with all these people who are not employed, who don't have a means of income? What is going to happen in the long run? And so those are the things that I get concerned about. Well, I'm happy to have a more streamlined world, but we've still got to take care of ourselves, take care of our people, right?
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see where all of that goes for sure. All right. Let's see. What do I got here? I got a real quick one. And this one concerns Steve as well. I'm pretty grateful for all my friends and co-hosts on the shows that I do, from the Cinephiles here currently to the Geek Buddies to the Hot Mic, the Jedi Way, the new one, Spill the Tequila, which I do with Winston A. Marshall, and jumping on Christian shows every Monday. This has been so much fun to enjoy this with the friendships that I have. Is it always stress-free? No. Is it always conflict-free? No. But the fact that I, in 2024, get to pay my bills, make income, save money, and build a little bit of a nest egg because I get to work with my friends talking about the things that I enjoy talking about is a very strong blessing in my life. And I know a lot of people don't get to do that in their own lives. So I'm very thankful for that in 2024, that that is still going, that it keeps expanding, and that people keep discovering these shows all the more so as my channel grows more and more, to have more and more people come aboard. So I'm very thankful for all those people and for the people who've helped me behind the scenes, who I don't necessarily want to name because some of them want to stay private, but people help me behind the scenes, edit some of this stuff, create some of this stuff, you know, give me pointers and advice to help me get stronger and bigger as a YouTube creator. Big, big thank you to all of them as well. So I'm very grateful for all of it that's happening here in my life currently, you know?
We just got a comment in the stream from JMB who says that AI is going to suggest that I replace you on the Cinephiles. And I'm like, come on. AI is very powerful. Billions of dollars of technology. It cannot replace the Outlaw.
Nope.
There is no technology in the world that can replicate what the Outlaw brings to the Cinephiles. It is an impossible task, and they should not even try.
That's standard JMB, though. He loves to bust my balls, you know, because, you know, for his own reasons, I guess. Yeah.
For you know, reasons. Well, I was just building off what you said and your joy of being able to make these shows with your friends and talk about things that you love. I will say that in the late 80s, early 90s, when I was working in a comic book store, I was a full geek expert. I read all the good comic books, all the science fiction. I really knew what was going on in the geek world. And somewhere along the way, I fell out of touch and really was very out of touch until one of my favorite podcasts that I listen to almost instantly what comes out came out, and that is the Geek Buddies. So I am very grateful for the Geek Buddies for upping my geek cred, keeping me involved in the geek world, and being just, you know, it is a weird thing that it's like, these are my really, really good friends who I get to hang out with and talk to anyway, but getting them in my ears a couple of times a week usually is fantastic. So thank you to the Geek Buddies.
Thank you. And of course, we are absolutely the way we are in person with you. We are the way on the show. So I mean it. I feel like it's probably a reminder of what that experience is like.
Exactly.
All the time. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you, Bruce. You know it. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you. I appreciate that. What else have you got, Steve? It was my turn there doing that. What have you got?
Well, I got a bunch of podcasts. You know, like I'm listening to things constantly. One of them that just ended, which was their friends of the show, and I've been on their show, and that is The Lubber's Hole.
Oh, no,
because, it ended? Which, Yeah, because they did all the Patrick O'Brien books.
Oh no,
they ran out of books, and they thought about going and moving on to the Hornblower books or the Sharp novels or some other historical fiction, and they decided not to. And I totally, obviously, respect their decision. But I miss it. Was Sunday morning. I got up and listened to Lubberholes every morning, and it's not there anymore, which is too bad. There's some other fantastic podcasts, you know, in dealing with some of the heavy issues, and in particular things like Israel and Gaza. Yeah. Ezra Klein has been absolutely killing it. Is that it is not what?
What does Ezra do on NPR or what? What
he's on a New York Times podcast. It's the Ezra Klein Show.
Okay,
and he has had on Palestinians and Israelis, hardliners, liberals, all different, and he's been looking at these things from all different sides. Wow. And he is a super, super smart guy, and a super like really wants to get in the weeds and deal with some of this stuff. And it's absolutely fantastic show. I am thrilled. I'll say this as a podcast because I listen to it. I'm thrilled Jon Stewart came back to The Daily Show one day a week. And I think the whole cast of The Daily Show is great. And Jon Stewart's standalone podcast, The Weekly Show, is also really good. And so I feel like there's a bunch of people that are sort of trying to look at things in a new way. And another one is my conservative friend who I mentioned many times is the Charles C.W. Cook podcast, which I've been on. And he is, you know, and he pisses me off and I'm angry at him regularly. And yet I always learn stuff. And another one that I learned about through Charlie is I now listen to the National Constitution Center every week and hear people debating about originalism and constitutional law and the Supreme Court and history of various judges. They just had one on Woodrow Wilson, which was fascinating. Ooh. And his relationship with the Supreme Court and with Brandeis and Oliver Wendell Holmes. And I just love it. So I'm thrilled that there are these resources out there of really smart people exploring complicated, smart ideas, you know?
Well, I think to kind of follow that strain of thought as well, I have to be thankful for PBS in 2024, Steve. I've really dived into those documentaries more and more that they have on the channel there. I mean, as I said, we talked about on our show, I tore through the Hemingway documentary a couple of times, which was really fascinating. Went back, started watching the baseball documentary, got really caught up in that one. I know those are older documentaries, but it was great in 2024 to discover them and jump into them, because I am really kind of in a place now where sports documentaries are a massive part of my weekly watching. And it's more not a matter of like, oh, I just want to relive these moments. No, it's more a matter of discovering people overcoming these obstacles, overcoming these things that are thrown in their way to achieve the things they want to achieve, either together as a group or solo, depending on the pursuit. 30 for 30, E60 on ESPN. They've been doing some great stuff. The latest Michael Chang documentary on his journey as a tennis player and his rise to the fame and as a young man in the 1980s and what that was like as an Asian American kid growing up in the world of tennis and the things he had to overcome and endure and face and confront, I thought was fascinating. The Serena Williams documentary is really incredible. Recently, the Caitlin Clark stuff, where they're following all these young women as women's sports is exploding across the country and across the globe, seeing this change that is coming here all over the place has been fascinating. The most recent one that I saw about the riots during the Stanley Cup and in Canada, I thought was incredible. In Vancouver, was so interesting to watch. So there's so much that's going on in these worlds. But with PBS, I kind of lost touch with these things that are meant to educate me. And so going back into the world of PBS and watching these documentaries and seeing these explorations of these historical figures and these current topical subjects, I think has been a great experience to see it again. And so I'm so thankful and grateful that PBS is a resource that we can turn to get these incisive and interesting explorations of these people and these subjects, you know?
So here's one for me. I'll say that I feel like I've kind of turned a corner on social media.
Ooh,
you know, which is I'm going like this on my Instagram feed, and I kind of, after a while, I just had this moment of kind of like, I've got nothing. There's nothing. There's been nothing like, and that it, and sort of the thing of like, yeah, will there be another cool video? Will there be another foodie thing? Will there be another art thing? And it'll be the same as the one that was before in terms of my growing as a human, in terms of any, it's just like, yeah, I'll see another of those and it'll entertain me and take my time away.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm kind of just like, yeah, I don't, there's just nothing there at a certain point, you know? And so I'm hoping that this, I don't know that this is true, and maybe I'll get sucked into some more social media in some other way, you know? And I also think I wonder if humans are maybe starting to turn a little bit of a corner as well. You know, like, I'm not saying that they have, it's hugely influential. I hope so, because obviously this is all really bad for us. And so I'm grateful that my perspective is shifting on some of that stuff.
Well, certainly there's been a mass migration from Twitter to Blue Sky. It's over,
which I have to do. I haven't done yet. I will.
Yeah. It's over 20 million people have gone over to Blue Sky from Twitter. That's pretty huge.
Yeah.
In terms of the footprint. I know for me personally, I've seen like 600 people leave my followers to go be a part of Blue Sky and deactivate their Twitter accounts and let me know that they deactivated the Twitter accounts. It's been surprising to see. I still have my Twitter or X account, whatever it is, but I'm over there on Blue Sky as well. But I think you're right. I think social media viewing, from what I saw in the stats in exploring some of the stuff to discuss on the show today, the social media viewing has increased by since 2019 by leaps and bounds. But people being on social media itself has started to be less and less because of the misinformation, the disinformation, the battles, the fights, all these things, which, of course, I've been guilty of as well, being a part of that in battles sometimes with people on social media. And all of that is starting to turn people off. And do you know what? That gives me hope. That gives me hope that we, listen, whatever you want to say about things, this election, you look at the recent numbers, it's a 1.5% difference in the popular vote. The House is only separated by 3 to 4 seats. So this is not some landslide or mandate or massive overhaul of the country. Not that at all. It's more a matter of we are even more evenly divided than ever. It's leaned towards one side this time around, leaned towards one side the other time around. But there is a massive amount of people in the middle who want to be catered to. And I think that's where hopefully more people are turning to and moving away from disinformation and misinformation and wanting to find commonality rather than difference, wanting to find acceptance rather than rejection. And I hope, and I think social media, which has been kind of, which caters to almost a sense of condescension or elitism, hope that's now being changed and people are moving away from it because they don't want to be caught up in that nonsense anymore. And I'm with you at times, man. At times I'm on there and I'm like, what are you doing? You've been on this for an hour and you're just scrolling and scrolling when you could be reading a book or you could be listening to a podcast to educate yourself or spending more time with your girlfriend. Oh, sorry, with your partner. I gotta say that. Or with your friends. And these things are building more content for your channel. These are these things where you got to look at it and be like, okay, it is becoming a time suck, but a mental health suck more than anything else. And that's the thing that I'm kind of turning a corner on myself, to be honest with you. I'd have deactivated it by now if I didn't have so many followers that I need to promote my content through. But if I didn't have that, I probably would at some point just deactivate it and move on and go back to reading articles off the websites like I used to before social media. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens, man. It's a big thing.
It is.
All right. I want to hit the movies, Steve, before we run out of time here because we're past an hour. Here are the movies I'm grateful for, and Steve, feel free to chime in on your own with whatever you got. I got Dune Part 2, Civil War. I thought that was an incredible film this year that really explored certain aspects. Was it all believable? No, but I liked the gutsiness of being able to put that onto the screen. I thought Challengers was some of the best work of Luca Guadagnino, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, Furiosa, Inside Out 2, Deadpool and Wolverine, A Quiet Place, Day One, Sing Sing, Alien Romulus, Wild Robot, Saturday Night, Transformers, The Outrun, Wicked, Gladiator 2, and as I said already, Super Slash Man. So those are some of the films that I'm very grateful for that came out this year. Just a sample. There's so many more, like Anora and other films that I thoroughly enjoyed. And I'm in the middle of The Heretic right now with Hugh Grant and see where I land on that one. I've got The Substance and other stuff to watch in the next few days. So for me overall, I'm really grateful to have such an interesting and eclectic a group of movies to come out in 2024 that were really challenging and enjoyable to watch.
So, as you know, we had talked about just talking about movies, and I said, look, I just can't do it because I just don't watch as many movies as you do. Yeah. You know, strangely enough, you have the cinephiles. I take so much time, and there's other things, and I know people think it's bizarre considering our show, but I have fewer to say than you, but I will echo what you say. Deadpool Wolverine was a ball.
Yeah.
I think Furiosa totally delivers on it being Furiosa. You know, do I think it's as good as Fury Road? I do not, but like it's still like ridiculous to look at. I fucking loved Wicked. I think Wicked is my favorite movie of the year.
Wow.
I can't. Yeah, I think so. Again, I haven't seen as many movies right. as you have seen.
But you can still say it's your favorite movie because you know, of the movies you've seen. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just think it was so good. And I was shocked. I never once looked at my watch in that movie. Yeah. And that was a long movie, and I never felt bored. I'd seen the musical twice, and I like the musical a lot. I think there's uneven parts of I listen to your Geek Buddy spoiler review, and I would quibble about, like, it doesn't, the musical doesn't work perfectly for me in every way. What works really well. And I think the movie solved a ton of those problems and just really gave detail and sense to the characters and depth where there wasn't really depth before. Mm-hmm. Design wise, it's amazing. Some of the numbers are amazing. I agreed with some of the quibbles over maybe coming in and out of the songs a little too much at certain points that you guys had, or that Shannon, I think, mostly had on Geek Buddies. But in general, I think that's a remarkable movie. And it's so funny because you and I just did a short on why does Hollywood not advertise musicals as musicals?
Right.
And I hope now, with the huge success of Wicked, they go, oh, people do like musicals if it's a good musical, and that they won't stop hide it, because I'm sure people walked into Wicked and go, wow, is there going to be this much singing? Really?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it was a great musical, great experience. My son loved it. Like, we had just a ball going to see it.
Right on. Yeah. I know a lot of people, I've seen a lot of articles over the last few days of people on these websites coming out and pitching this film as a Best Picture winner, not just nominee, winner, which I think is very interesting. Of course, The Brutalist is still to come out. Queer is still to come out from Luca Guadagnino. So there are other things that are coming out that might take that Best Picture win. But who knows? I mean, it's such a crazy year for movies. It's very possible that Wicked rides this wave into a nomination and possibly a victory. I mean, look, just a few years ago, no one saw Coda coming, and that thing took Best Picture out from some really accomplished film. So you never know what can happen in the world of film, for sure. All right, Stephen, we've been talking for over an hour, but there's a bunch of people sending questions here. Do you have anything more you want us to make sure you hit in terms of gratefulness before we wrap up here, after we list asking these questions?
I'll give you two. One is just a quick one, which is I have become obsessed with crossword puzzles in 2024. And the New York Times crossword puzzle has become just a daily ritual for me. And I'm really grateful for that. And I will add one other. We've sort of been hinting about it and talking about it in a general way, but I will just say I am grateful that the election is over.
I have to agree with you, man. If nothing else, I think that's the one thing everyone across the country might be able to come together on, is that this election cycle is finally over. Does it mean the madness is ending? No, but certainly the election cycle is over. And now we know where everything stands, and we can go forward from that place. So I hear you absolutely. Two last things for me. Tubi and Pluto TV, as I've spoken about on numerous times with you, Steve, getting to go back to that time in my life where I could flip channels and I had to sit through the commercials to watch the things I wanted to watch. They're mostly uncut on both of those services. So it's been great to kind of get back in touch with that old school way of existing as well. That was a lot of fun. I too give thanks that my mother is in good health at this age, over 80 years old that she is. And my sister and her children and her husband survived their move to this different state they moved to and are happy and thriving where they're at right now. And of course, and I hope Steve agrees with me on this one, I have to give thanks to 2024 to the Beatles, because the Beatles got nominated for 2 Grammys for Now and Then. That Beatles 64 documentary on Disney Plus is fantastic. The one that just dropped 2 days ago, and the Let It Be doc that dropped earlier this year that really kind of gave you a better idea of what happened there behind the scenes, I thought was fantastic. So for me, I think the Beatles in 2024. Oh, and the mono releases, and Paul McCartney had a new release. So it's so great that in 2024 we can still appreciate and love the Beatles and get more content from them in our lives to praise and to hopefully give awards to. So just want to throw that one out there as well, man.
I'm 60 Beatles 64, maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow, but it'll be soon.
You're going to love it. It's really not, it's not a rehash, which I was very surprised by. I thoroughly enjoyed that. All right, let's get to some of these super chats here, Steve, before we wrap up the show, from some of our viewers, their thoughts on what they're grateful for in 2024. Carlton Rutter says, London calling. Sorry, I'm unable to catch your show live. I'm very grateful to you both for your amazing show, which is my safe space in a crazy world. Yeah, Steve, we've had, We've had quite a few people reach out to us and tell us that, right?
Yeah. Thank you, Carlton. It's an honor to be a safe space for someone. And I hope that we continue to be that. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Vincent Zawada says, love you guys. Thankful for Dune 2. Yeah, Steve, I love
it. It was great. It was great. Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic movie.
I wonder if that's going to come in a late surge and take Best Picture. It's going to be interesting to see the battles between these films. Jonathan Beck says, I'm thankful for animated films coming out this year, like The Wild Robot, Inside Out 2, and the upcoming Wallace and Gromit film. Yeah. Steve, your thoughts on these animated films?
I haven't seen The Wild Robot. I heard it's fantastic, and I haven't seen it yet. I totally liked Inside Out 2. Do I think it's quite as good as Inside Out 1? No, I don't, but did it make me cry and make me laugh? It absolutely did. And man, if Wallace and Gromit is good, that'll be awesome.
Because
I have a very soft spot in my heart for those.
I know. It's been a while since The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, I'm glad we're getting a new Wallace and Gromit film, which will be out on Netflix, I think, in January. But Inside Out 2, for me, I loved the movie because of how it tackled teenagers and panic attacks and anxiety attacks and mental health. I thought the film in that way went into the next step of the journey that it had begun with in the first film. And I love that they were able to do that with Riley. And because nowadays kids are much more aware of this within themselves, they're experiencing it at higher levels. And so they're finally able to give it a name. They're finally able to see a commonality and experience on screen in an animated film like this and realize that it's okay and realize that you can do things to kind of walk your way through it and walk your way out of it. So for that reason alone, I think Inside Out 2 was a great experience this year, if not for the overall film, which I thought was fantastic. The Cali Kid says, do not accept a life you do not deserve. Oh, well said, Cali. I appreciate that. It's very kind of you. He also says, I am grateful for movies, good and bad, all movies. Also grateful for the Grateful Dead, RIP Phil Lesh. Grateful the Dodgers won a real world series. Listen, it was a real world series, for God's sakes, that they won in 2020. It only matters that you win. That's what matters. So, Steve, the Grateful Dead is an interesting situation. Are you grateful for the Grateful Dead? Is that something that you're into at all in any way, shape, or form?
It's so funny because being a guy who grew up in Marin County during the 70s, went to Berkeley, but was in all of that world. I've never been a Deadhead. Like I never went to a Grateful Dead concert. I wish that I had. I knew lots of people who did. Yeah. I haven't. I know, and I know like the big songs, but I've never done that. And my guess is if I were to go down that rabbit hole, I would love it. You know, everything I know about them, I would love. But no, I'm not a big, huge Grateful Dead person.
I'll be here curious to hear what the Grateful Dead fans think about the fact that Jerry Garcia's estate has approved his voice to be used for AI to read books to people, to read these. I mean, he won't be able to cuss. He won't be able to say anything sexually suggestive, but other than that, it's pretty much covered that he can read books in his voice. And will Grateful Deadheads be okay with that? It's an interesting situation, Steve. What do you think about that?
I think we mentioned this on one of our shorts recently, but like,
yeah,
if you went to The Hate in 1967 and said, listen, and there everyone's hanging out there and it's Jefferson Airplane and it's, you know, and it's all of the whole crowd say, listen, someday a computer, after you're dead, a computer will be owned by a giant corporation will own your voice and be able to sell it to people to do whatever they want with it. Like, what would they think of that? It is so the antithesis of everything in the 60s that you would sell your voice to a corporation. It is fucking nuts. That's what I think of it.
But then again, a lot of those hippies became yuppies and so it became the corporate underworld that you see today. Justin Toner sent us a couple of Streamlabs. Thank you, Justin. We know Buffalo starts soon. We appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us, Justin. He says, hi guys. This year, I'm grateful for my friends and family. Dune Part 2, X-Men 97 for sure. House of the Dragon, Shogun, The Penguin. Sorry I've missed the advisory board meetings. They happen when I'm either working or unavailable. Hope to make some again soon. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you, Justin.
Yeah. X-Men 97, yes, Steve. I mean, that's a hell of a series.
I haven't watched it yet.
I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, I know. Steve. I'm sorry.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, yeah. We'll wait on that conversation. He also says, I forgot to add, I'm also grateful for Deadpool and Wolverine, Alien Romulus, and the great 4K Blu-ray release this year, especially of Seven Samurai and Godzilla from Criterion. Well, it is very funny you mention that because I picked this up yesterday, the Seven Samurai 4K. It is half off at Barnes & Noble. Had to get it just to see. I'm not buying many of the 4K transfers, but certainly if I've already got it in Blu-ray, but certainly I had to get the Seven Samurai one just to see the difference. Because I saw something, because watching that Beatles 64 documentary and seeing how clean that black and white video looks now just blows my mind. And if that's what I can get in Seven Samurai 4K, then I'm even more excited to see the film in a whole new way in that version. But I tell you this, Steve, I saw something on YouTube yesterday, 20K and 8K on YouTube. What is happening? What the hell, man?
It's just gonna keep going. So I will say, so this actually was one of my other grateful things. You dive perfectly into it, which is that I'm grateful that my 13-year-old son is starting to be interested in some dad movies. And he said he was really into Western. So I said, I'm going to show you your grandfather, Grandpa Mickey's favorite Western, which is one of my favorite Westerns. And I showed him Magnificent Seven, which he loved. Then I told him, you know, someday there's this other movie that this is based on that I want you to see. And I showed him a trailer for Seven Samurai. And he said, well, I'd go see that. And I was like, are you sure? This is a 3-hour and 45-minute black and white subtitled movie in Japanese. He said, yeah, I'll go see that. And I went on my phone and saw that the 4K release was playing at Vidiot's right near me. And my son and I went to see the Seven Samurai. You will be amazed by how good it looks. It looks fucking fantastic. And he totally liked the movie. Did he struggle a little bit with it at some points? No, but he really, really liked it. He was involved. So I am so grateful that I'm going to get to share some of the great films of all time with my son over the next few years.
That's great. That's how you pass these things on, man. Just like they were passed on to you. That's an awesome thing to experience for sure. And of course, I'd be remiss not to say a grateful shout out to my partner, Lily the Outlaw, there for everything that she has done through the year of 2024. As Steve said, not an easy year. Certainly there are times where I struggled and had some rough moments and dark days and tough times. And she is always there with the right words, the right sentiments, the right jokes, the right anger at times, the right frustration, the right tough love. And I couldn't thank her enough. And I don't know what I ever did, honestly, to be blessed this late in life with someone so incredible. Because I've been through hell and back with so many relationships, and to have finally found someone who I vibe with every second of every day, even in our arguments or even in our occasional disagreements, it means the world to me. So I'm always going to be eternally grateful every year for this late in life partnership that I have found, you know, because the Outlaw had to settle down at some point, Steve.
Well, and frankly, I'm grateful to Lindley too, because of how much joy and comfort that she brings you. And I will say, I'm grateful for the Cinephiles, because we're 9 years into this thing. This is now you are the longest creative partnership I have ever had.
Wow.
This is the longest creative endeavor I've ever been involved in. And really, it's the most successful creative endeavor I've ever been involved in terms of, like, we've built this thing here that I'm proud to work on every single week. It is well received by people who care about the show that we're doing.
Yeah.
And that, you know, again, it's like you and Lindley coming, you know, late in life in my 40s after a lot of failures and a lot of frustration to find this thing that we can do. And it is totally our own.
Yeah.
This is our thing that we created. We don't have any boss. We don't have anyone telling us what to do except the advisory board. But they don't really tell us what to do. They suggest. And so I'm very, very grateful that every week you and I get to get on a call and have the conversation about a great film. What a wonderful blessing to have.
And we're grateful to be able to pass these films on to you all, like Steve is passing on some of the film love to his son. We are passing on these films in a way to you all as well, for those of you who don't know it. Because, Steve, we can't count the amount of times people have said to me, well, I'm not going to watch the film until I hear you guys talk about it. Then I'm going to watch the movie. It's always so weird to me, but yet it's so fascinating that people are willing to do that. And certainly we've got a film coming up, I think, next week, right, Steve, that I have never seen and we are going to discuss. Is that correct?
That is, and I'd be happy to announce it right now and plug it if you don't mind, because
please.
I am halfway through prepping for it, and I really hope you're going to love it. That film is The Sound of Music. Robert Wise won the Best Picture, was the most successful movie of all time before, I think this maybe it was The Sting that beat it before Jaws destroyed them all. But like it is a remarkable. At the very least, it is beautifully shot. So even if you hate all the characters, which I can't imagine you're not going to love Christopher Plummer,
Yeah,
it is. And Julie Andrews is spectacularly amazing. So I really hope you like it as much as I do. And it's going to be a great, great conversation.
100%. I can't wait to watch it. And I'm looking forward to it. I may record myself watching it, putting up as a special video on my channel, but definitely going to watch it for the first time and see with my reaction, all of it. And it's going to be so much fun discussing it with you as well. All right. Well, there you go. Thanks to everybody. Oh, wait, we got one more. Julius Wyatt says, guys, my grateful for my favorite films, Lord of the Rings. Sorry, always the shot. You know, we're getting closer and closer to tackling those movies. The time is coming, Steve. It's kind of like Godfather. We circled Godfather for years and then finally did it. I feel like Lord of the Rings is on the horizon. Am I wrong on this? I can see I have Gandalf on the horizon there. Yeah,
I've been thinking about it for a long time. We really are going to have to figure out how we're going to approach it.
Yeah.
Because what's hard is I prefer the extended versions to the theatrical ones. But they're really, really long and ridiculous at some point. And there's some points where it's like, oh my God, how long is this going to go on? But I actually think movie-wise, they're better. And so like trying to figure out, if this is like, do we do it all at once? It would take us a couple of months easily. Yeah. It would be 3 months to get through the Lord of the Rings.
Absolutely.
You know, something like that. So like, I don't know quite how we're going to tackle it, but I do think we're getting to the place where we should.
It could be our summer series. It could be our first ever summer series on the Cinephiles, like they do in theaters, their summer series, where we tackle from June, July, August, all three of the Lord of the Rings movies. I think I might be down with that. It could be kind of fun.
And I will tell you, I will share with you how I feel one should approach those films, which is you take the extended versions.
Yes.
And it is not three movies. It is a 6-part miniseries.
Ooh.
Is you do half a movie per sitting. And that's kind of how you do it, because to do each of those long movies back to back is just too much. No, it's a mini series. It's a series. It's a TV mini series, not a movie. You know, that's how I think of it.
Done and done. I love that idea. All right. Well, there you go. Thanks to everybody who joined us today live. We appreciate it. For those of you who are joining us later, when you listen to this particular episode or watch this particular episode here on the channel, we appreciate it madly. Thanks to all you Cinephiles fans, Steve and I both very grateful for you all being fans of us, whether you're new, whether you just got on board, whether you've been with us for just a few years, whatever your time is as a fan of the Cinephiles and a supporter and a listener and a viewer, we appreciate you all madly. We're grateful for you in 2024. Just wanted to reiterate that and underline that. And thanks for the Streamlabs and Super Chats today. Steve, any final words? What should we tell them here as we wrap up, my man?
No, I just echo what you said at the very beginning of the show. I'm grateful for all of you that helped the Cinephiles happen. I'm grateful for everyone who supports us on patreon.com/thecinephiles, particularly our advisory board. And of course, you can follow me at SR Morris on Twitter or X. And I'm going to get to Blue Sky, and maybe I'll even change the name. Who knows what's going to happen next with that? Cinephiles.net is where you can buy or stream all of our movies. You can subscribe to the show right here on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts. And you can also support the show through Apple Podcasts, where you can get ad-free versions of the show and our Cinephile shorts. The Cinephile shorts are really good, if I do say so myself, and well worth it. And that's it. So thank you to everybody who is watching, and thank you to everyone who listens to this in its podcast form.
Absolutely. And please, you can follow me at The Roco Says on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And listen, for all the clients who support us, thanks to all of you all. And for all you listening, a great way to support the Cinephiles is to also be a client of some of these products. If these products appeal to you and you like them, using our code to be a part of them, that would be great for you all. Uncommon Goods, all number of places here who've supported us over the last few months. Those are places you can take a look at and see if there's products there that work for you. That's another way you can support us here on the show. And of course, the Patreon, as Steve mentioned earlier as well. Please remember to subscribe to the channel down below. Leave your comments. What are you grateful for in 2024? What do you feel like we missed that you wanted us to discuss and be grateful for in 2024? Let us all know all of that down there in the comment section below. Hit a like on this video and share it on your social media. All right. Thanks, everybody. Take care of yourselves. Be well. Enjoy the rest of your Thanksgiving Day weekend. And we'll talk to you next time with another brand new Cinephiles Live episode here on the Cinephiles. Peace.